This is DJ Kick, and you're listening to Steve Kelly Delivers, where you get a glass and a half of inspiring, influential, and interesting guests with every podcast. You can follow Steve Kelly Delivers on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Steve Kelly Delivers is listener-supported on Venmo.com.
Hello, and welcome to episode 22 of Steve Kelly Delivers. It is a podcast that brings you quality entertainment first class. If you go to my website, stevekellydelivers.com, from there you can access my Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram accounts. Steve Kelly Delivers is a listener-supported podcast, so if you like the content of what you are hearing and would like to lend your support, I'm going to tell you a couple of ways how you can do just that. First, you want to subscribe to my show on iTunes, rate it, write a review, and tell your friends about me. Next, you can be my patron on Patreon. I will acknowledge all my patrons in the intro portion of every show. But if you'd like to take it a step further and want a personal introduction, you can always friend me on Venmo.com. And if you make a donation to my show via Venmo, I will give you a personal acknowledgement during the introductory portion of the next podcast. And now, with no further delay, let me introduce my next wonderful guest to you as I reached all the way to the other side of the world for this guest. Ladies and gentlemen, from Sydney, Australia, Tim Ferguson. Hello, Tim Ferguson, and welcome. We got Tim Ferguson here from the land down under, Sydney, Australia. Tim.
Hi, Steve Kelly. Hello, America.
Glad to have you on the show. This has been in the making for quite a few months now, hasn't it? We finally were able to coordinate, and you know, with the time difference, and we're making it work.
Yeah, unfortunately, people left us up to our own devices, Steve.
Yes, you know, what were they thinking?
what were they thinking? But finally, we got our act together and, you know, the two of us here, like we're podcasting.
Yes.
From the bottom of the world to the top of the world.
Exactly. So, one quick question for you. Are the toilets still flushing counterclockwise down there?
Yes, we've tried to make them go the other way, but the water just persists. Nobody knows why. Nobody has any idea why what happened. Scientists are no help. Who listens to those guys?
I know. Nobody here, that's for sure. Well, now that's kind of a good thing that they're going counterclockwise. If they switched and reversed, then, you know, we could be in trouble.
Yeah, I think so. And also, we've got to get a new toilet.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first question that I have for you, Tim, well, actually second, I think I asked the first already. Who's a cheeky monkey? And with that question, as the author of Cheeky Monkey, are you the man behind Mike Myers' catchphrase on the new version, the rebooted version of The Gong Show?
I imagine I am. I can only assume that that's what Mike's done. I did hear a Canadian whisper to me in the middle of the night. I'm married to a Canadian, but I don't know, they had a very deep voice and said, you know, give me your best. So, and I said, cheeky monkey. So, you know, if he wants to sue me, come find me, Mike.
Or, you know, if the book was written before he came up with that catchphrase, so if anyone could be litigious, I would think it would probably be you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He can find me and bring up a lawyer. You better bring a big one.
All right. So when you've written the book and came up with the phrase, what exactly is a cheeky monkey to the listeners?
Well, it's a book that shows you how to write narrative comedy, which is not like stand-up comedy or just jokes. It's about comedy and stories, comedy characters, comedy situations, how to build a situation in a situation comedy. You wouldn't believe how many scripts I have to go through that call themselves a sitcom that have no set. They've got a little bit of com, but without the set, it's just a lot of people saying smart-ass things. So I thought I'd better write a book that breaks it down. And the cheeky monkey side of it is that the theory of comedy I work with is that comedy is a primal and instinctive force, but nonetheless obeys various principles. It's a bit like a story has a beginning and a middle and an end, and most of the time a joke has a punchline that goes at the end. And if you accept that, then you might accept that it's also got a whole bunch of other principles, which operate like scaffolding, Steve, that you can build, using the same scaffolding, an outside dunny or outhouse or washroom or whatever you call it over there, or a cathedral. The structure itself remains the same, just the materials, the subject matter, as it were, differ. So you can make something fancy and classy that you can show your grandma, or you can have something that's like a dirty joke or a topical joke or a joke about Stormy Daniels' latest comment about the president.
And speaking of jokes...
Oh, it's great. Well, I mean, we just got them down here. It takes a while for news to get to us, but... What she says about your president, I mean, it's outrageous. I feel sorry for the mushroom in Mario Kart. We don't want to see the pictures here in Australia. We don't want to see the pictures. We don't want to see the polka dots. So keep that to yourself.
I apologize for that on behalf of America.
Of the entire continent. Well, the thing is, with the scaffolding, it can be as simple as a word with two meanings, and we all know those, puns. But it can be very different what you do with the pun. A lot of comedians will say, I don't do puns. I just won't do those, mate, because they're so old. But what they don't accept is that you can have a joke that you can tell your nana, which is like a great American one. I wondered why the baseball was getting bigger. Then it hit me. That's a famous American joke.
Yeah.
Grandma, she'll say, my God, I love the way you do that. You're so funny. Or, and of course, the word hit is the thing that's got two meanings. Or you can do another one by Susan Murray, a great Scottish comedian. And she says, my parents are from Glasgow, so they're incredibly hard. I mean, I was never smacked as a child. Well, maybe 1 or 2 grams to get me to sleep at night. And then you're taking the word smacked and you're looking at the two meanings. So it goes from being an everyday joke you can tell your grandma, and suddenly you're telling a joke about giving heroin to babies to make them go to sleep. So any comedian who tells me that they're above using those kind of jokes because they're what? They're old-fashioned, is missing out on an ability to surprise an audience, and that's the only way they will make an audience laugh. You can do anything you like, anyhow you like, but without surprise, you'll get jazz applause. You know when people click their fingers?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or you get comedians saying, yeah, that was very clever. I know what you did there. But they do know what you did there. Yeah, it's not going to work. But if you want to get a laugh, you got to surprise them, and a pun can do it. Don't worry. There are about 30 of these principles. After you get to 30, it stops, and you've got to go back to the beginning.
Wow, interesting.
Well, that's why every comedian, whether they're Sarah Silverman, whether it's Stephen Wright, or any of the new people who are out there, if it's working, they are using these principles, whether they're aware of it or not. Because it's a bit like magic. There are only so many ways you can hide a rabbit and reproduce it. Only so many ways you can put a drugged rabbit in your pocket without anybody noticing.
Yeah.
Once you start playing with the principles, writing comedy becomes a lot easier. And if you practice and practice, then you can start looking at beachside property.
All right. And moving right along, You are, we mentioned this earlier, a fellow podcaster. So tell me about the Bunga Bunga podcast, the one that you run.
Well, Bunga Bunga recently got reviewed, Steve, by a great podcast you guys have called Who Are These Podcasts? And I don't know how they heard about us, but they tracked us down and they review podcasts. And they're very funny at tearing them apart. They took apart another Australian podcast, I think, called The Vegan Couple. These are two people who are vegans. I mean, what are the odds of getting two people together refusing to eat things that are tasty? No wonder that which works. Well, and they reviewed us, and basically, if you tune in, it's Bunga Bunga on Who Are These Podcasts, and the two hosts agree that our show does not make sense. We deliberately don't make sense. We go from a political diatribe to the sound effect of a horse pissing, with no explanation, with no glue, with no, we'll take a break now and listen to a horse pissing. You just go from one to the other. So it's a real grab bag. It's gone crazy over here in Australia just because they've got nothing else to do. But it's great to get some American listeners tuning in as well. I'm sure they're, you know, they're all baffled, and that's what we want. Stay baffled. You start feeling confident, you've got to think, but who am I? I'm one person. What the hell am I feeling confident about?
Wow. That's definitely the fabric of your show right there, and that is what makes it entertaining. And
it throws you off balance. And you sit there wondering what the hell we're doing. All we're doing is drinking coffee in a cafe surrounded by very beautiful people, because we don't go places where there are ugly people. We're too important. We're national treasures in Australia, so we can't be seen. I'm sorry, ugly people. We can't be seen at the places that ugly people go to.
All right, and another feather in your cap is that you're also an author of a book called Carry a Big Stick. What's that about?
Oh, yeah, well, that's my latest book, which is a memoir. Somebody said, look, you've hit the age of 50, you should write a memoir, because, you know, who knows how long you're going to last. And touring comedians, which I have been for a long time, have the shortest lifespan of anyone in the arts. Someone told me that, and I said, oh, that's funny. What are you doing trying to freak me out? But it's actually true. I've had it confirmed, and it kind of makes sense. And it's part of the book. It kind of makes sense because when you tour as a solo comedian or just with a small duo or trio, you normally tour with nobody. You're lucky if a manager is coming along with you. I tour with the Doug Anthony All-Stars. Don't Google them. You'll be disappointed and you'll be angry if you look up the Doug Anthony All-Stars material. And you'll worry about the dogs. But if that's true, I thought, well, I better hurry up. I better write my memoir because comedians don't last long. Because the food is terrible. There's no one worrying about your diet, no one making sure you get back to the hotel before 5 every morning, smashed, crashed, drunk as a skunk, hammering your head against the wall, trying to make your damn computer play porn when it won't because the Wi-Fi's not working. So I wrote a memoir, and the memoir's, you know, funny because my life's been, you know, funny in that, you know, terribly scary, sad kind of, oh man, oh that guy, what terrible decisions he's made. But it's called Carry a Big Stick because for a while there, I had to carry a walking stick. I now get around in a wheelchair because I have, and cue the sad violin music. Just get out the smallest violin that you have because I have multiple sclerosis. Otherwise pronounced as multiple sclerosis is it's a thing where your brain starts to eat itself or your immune system starts to eat your nerves. Nobody knows why. They're only neurologists. they only went to university for so long, they don't know how to talk to girls. So you can't expect them to explain, you know, multiple sclerosis or what's happening, but that's what it's about. My descent into a wheelchair, which actually, you know, if you're a comedian, I'm telling you this in all seriousness, you should get yourself a walking stick or a Zimmer frame or a wheelchair, because there's nothing that freaks an audience out more. And when they see that, you get an extra 30 seconds before they decide to kill you. And that 30 seconds can give you the escape time that you need.
And also, on top of being a writer, you've actually written and directed some movies. One in 2016 was a movie called Spin Out. What was that movie about?
Well, Steve, there's this very strange event that happens in Australia called a bachelor spinster ball, which is kind of like your desperate and dateless balls. Basically, single people get together. But in Australia, because we are at the bottom of the world and we can get away with anything, what we do is we drive out into the country and we go to a shearing shed where they take the wool off sheep. You get 1,000 or 2,000 young people turning up, and they all drive these cars called utes, utility vans, which are like a pickup, but they're very low to the ground, unlike your big, oh my God, my dick is small, so I bought this giant car. We don't have that problem. So our cars are low slung, which means they can chuck donuts really easily. So we get together, and in the afternoon before the ball, we have what we call a circle work competition, where we drive our utes very fast in circles and spin outs and donuts and flaring for prize money. You can win big prize money. There's one in Deniliquin, you win 10 grand if you're the best person at doing circle work. We tried to take it to America, but your cars are too big. They keep rolling. Anyway, we wrote a movie about it. When young people turn up, there's a Jackaroo, there's a Jillaroo. Will they fall in love by the end of the movie? What do you think? There'll be a little bit of vomit, a bit of fighting, a bit too much drinking, and a little bit of, you fucking idiot, no, I'm not, all that stuff. And then, you know, true love blossoms. Spin Out, it's called. And it's available on, I don't know. You people have machines. It'll be out there somewhere. It was, you know, big in Australia. You'll be able to find it.
Yeah, I mean, on the internet or somewhere. I mean, you just type in the movie. It'll come up somewhere.
Yeah. You'll see cars turning around very fast. It was great fun to make. And, you know, by the end, everybody gets laid, even the audience, and that's important.
Yeah, oh, but in that case, that is definitely a movie that we got to watch.
Yeah. You've got to get laid at movies. Otherwise, you know, what, are you going to stare at Iron Man for 2 hours? For Christ's sake.
Exactly.
Iron Man.
And what have you done as a producer besides Spin Out? Like, what other...
I've done a few Australian sitcoms, which have been lots of fun. Or I've been a script producer on one recently, in fact, which was called Ricketts Lane, which starred a puppet. And it was basically The Odd Couple, except one of them's a puppet. And he's a drinking, womanizing, scoundrel kind of puppet. And that was good fun. And you might be able to find that out there on the magical, mystical internet machines. And also a sitcom called Das Kapital, Das with two A's, which was a Doug Anthony All-Stars science fiction sitcom where the three hapless characters find themselves curating a submarine in space, don't ask, it's complicated, that's full of the world's art treasures. And we're being beset by demons, by Norman Bates's mother, by monsters. We have a pet ogre. There are really bad Doctor Who style special effects. Yeah, we made that one. That was a deeply challenging sitcom. Challenging to make and more challenging to watch. It's got music, it's got sketches, it's got big stories, it's got romance, and of course sex. So America missed out on all these things because I think you were busy at an Amish college. I don't know what you do over there, but you're certainly, you know, you certainly talk funny.
Yeah, I guess you could say that from your perspective.
Make America great again. This was great last week. Let's do it again.
Yes, exactly. See, the phrase just never dies. Can always be recycled.
No, it's been working since those people walked off the Mayflower with their fancy shoes. Australia has a very different history to America, of course. When white settlers or European settlers turned up in Australia, they didn't have fancy little shoe buckles and their partners. They got dragged off in chains because they were all convicts, prisoners. So modern Australia has in the back of its mind the idea that, you know, we're all in a prison. So it's very rare for people to beat their chests. It's very rare for people to treat those in power with respect because, you know, the prisoner who shows off or the one who sucks up to the warden finds themselves dead in the morning, which is hard because they're dead, but you get my idea.
Yeah, yeah.
So Australians have a tall poppy syndrome, which is the exact opposite to what you Americans have, which I think is a superior way of going about life, which is to celebrate people who do well. But in a prison, you don't celebrate, you know, the prisoner who's got a little gold star that the warden gave them. You get that prisoner and, you know, you remove a layer of their skin and you eat their brain while you explain to them that you've got to keep your poppies short. That's a little history lesson for America about Australia, a country with whom you are strangely an ally. Nobody knows sure why.
Exactly. We're still trying to figure that out. All right. And on your IMDb page, you're credited with a lot of self appearances in shows. Like how do you explain that? That you have like more just as yourself in, as opposed to like actual characters.
Well, they get me on because they think I can, you know, say something half amusing. I am, you know, a comedian, and I've been doing it for so long, it's very hard to escape people. In America, you've got, you know, over 300 million people. In Australia, we've got 20. And you're thinking, 20 million? I'm saying, we've got 20 people. There are only 20 people of worth that you'd want to talk to living in Australia. There's about 19.5 million people that you want as viewers. And what that means is, you know, if you want to do something, the list of people you can get is terrifyingly short. It's like Texas, except smaller. We take up more room than America, but not with that many people. So that's why I get thrown everywhere. It's kind of why I sort of stretched my wings and thought, I will write the Cheeky Monkey and explain how comedy should be written, and I will teach people how to do it. I will stand in front of a room and say, shut up, you people. I'm going to tell you how to be funny. Stop flirting for 20 seconds and look at me. And it's great. I've spent 10 years running around the planet telling people how to be funny, and I've got to come to the United States of America and do the same, because you don't have many teachers of narrative comedy. You've got some, but there aren't many people who can guarantee you this is how you write a funny movie or this is how you write a sitcom. Most screenwriting teachers find comedy a bit scary. And so they say, well, you know, watch a lot of comedies and follow your heart, follow your instincts. This is the dumbest thing you can do because it's a very slow process. If you've got principles, if you understand how the frameworks of comedy work, you just save yourself time. There's no formula. I can't teach formulas for comedy because then everybody would know the formula, so you can't surprise them. But I can teach you how the building's put together, and it will save you a lot of time. The great thing is, when I tour around, and I've been doing it in the UK too, there aren't many people who teach it. So if you start teaching how to write a sitcom, you'll buy two beach houses.
Nice. And so that would kind of segue into my next question I was going to ask, is that you're teaching at NYU, and that's right here in the United States, New York University. That's what you would teach would be the comedy course.
Well, yeah, except the NYU has a campus in Sydney, where the last 3 years I was, you know, teaching young Americans, how to write sketches. And also, you know, if they were interested, how to put a sitcom together, how to sell it successfully, how to get it made. So that's great fun. So I'd love to come over to NYU, the real place, because in Australia, it's a really beautiful campus. So the students are spoiled rotten, and they get the best teachers that Australia can give them, and also me, because I'm not one of those people. But it's great fun, and it's so cool. You got to understand, in Australia, you know, when you say, "So I'm teaching people from New York," people are like, "Whoa, oh man." Whereas the rest of America treats New York like New Jersey does, which is, so what? Get out of my car.
Yeah.
But down here, it gives you a lot of credibility. I get credibility that I do not deserve from teaching young Americans. But I'm going to come over there and bring my theory of comedy, which doesn't do much except will save you 10 years of wondering.
Yeah.
And you get laid.
That's definitely a good thing right there to throw in. And you get laid.
And you get laid. I mean, amongst each other, because you'll be feeling so energetic, you've got to put that energy to good use when the course is finished.
And it's funny you bring up New York. That's where I'm originally from. I was born and raised there, Long Island, and have since been living down here in Florida. Now I'm on the west coast of Florida, Tampa Bay area. And are you still there? It looks like you've kind of froze.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Satellite, spies.
Yeah, or both. All right, and we lost Tim from the land down under there for a little bit, but he's, with the magic of technology, he's back. And better than ever.
The deep state, that's what they're doing. I don't know what it is, but it sounds so cool, a state that's deep. And I'm not talking about Arizona, but something deeper than that.
Wow, and Arizona's pretty deep because they got Grand Canyon out there, so you know, that's...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. We know all about America because ever since I was a kid, we were bombarded by everything from the Cisco Kid Mexican cowboy TV show through what was called Hogan's Heroes, a brilliant sitcom that takes place in Stalag 13, a German prisoner of war camp. I mean, you know, and then you hit us with MASH, and then you sort of sat back and you had a cup of coffee, and then you came back and hit us with Seinfeld. For God's sake. Oh, yeah, Mary Tyler Moore was in there somewhere. Like, and then you go away, and then you come back, and then you hit us with everything. Everything on TV that's funny. 30 Rock. My God, you people, it's like you fell in a bucket of funny, and you're just splashing it everywhere. Tina Fey, funniest woman in the world, which makes her funnier than any man.
Yeah.
You know, and she looks like Tina Fey. Jesus Christ, you people. I don't know how you do it.
Well, just a little secret. Hollywood is kind of the thing that keeps us relevant as a country, but just don't let the rest of the world know that.
Oh, yeah, Hollywood. I've heard about Hollywood. I got friends who live near the Hollywood sign. So, you know, makes it easy when they're a little bit under the weather and headed home. They know which way they're supposed to head. I think that's what it's for, is just to say, you know, hey, you stoned people, come this way.
Yeah, you know, instead of, like, using stars for navigation, like, look up and at the constellations, we're like, oh, well, hey, this, where's the Hollywood sign? There it is. All right, head that direction.
Yeah, because there are stars all over Hollywood. It can be confusing.
Oh, absolutely. You don't want to use the stars. You use the Hollywood sign.
No way, man.
And then you brought up Seinfeld, which is an excellent, iconic show. I mean, especially as a New Yorker, I love that. I mean, that show was just great. One of the best I could think of.
Do you want me to ruin Seinfeld for you forever?
I don't know. How do I answer that? I'm curious. I want to know.
I'll tell you how it works. I'll tell you how it works. You know how they said Seinfeld is a show about nothing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the premise of it.
It's bull twang. What the writers know is one of the great principles of comedy, which is not a show about nothing. Seinfeld really focused on things that were trivial, that seemed like nothing, that were taken as being very important to the characters. So everything was always blown out of, you know, like Jerry gets this beautiful girlfriend who has what he thinks are man hands. Now, she is a girlfriend that anybody, whoever they are, would be more than happy to hang around and say, this here is my girlfriend. But because her hands are a little large, he just can't get his head past it. Or when wears a puffy shirt, you know, he's infuriated. His girlfriend is a very soft talker, so he has to do what she says because he can't see the difference between trivia and something important. For any of us, we'd say, hey, I can't understand what you're saying, but there's no way I'm wearing that shirt. But the other thing Seinfeld does is it flips it. So it takes things that are really genuinely important and the characters treat them as if they're nothing. So, like, you know that episode, The Double Dipper?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah, so George goes along to a wake and he grabs a corn chip and he dips it in the dip. And he bites it, then he dips the chip in again, and a guy comes up and says, you're a double dipper. And if you dip again, I'm going to kill you, or something like that. Which is a guy taking something trivial as being worthy of violence. Whereas, you know, in that situation, we might say, excuse me, you might have a cold, have all the corn chips you like, but could you not double dip because you might be transferring your hideous disease? But why is he there? That's one principle. The other principle is, why is he there? He goes over to the coffin. There's a young woman in the coffin. And George sees the father and he says to the father, I'm so terribly sorry for your loss. The father says, thank you very much. He doesn't know who George is. Then George says, I suppose she's got a death certificate. And the father says, well, I guess. And George says, do you think I could get a photocopy of that death certificate? And why? Because George is operating on the other principle, because he's there to get a photocopy of the death certificate so he can take it to the airport and get a $20 discount on his flight home. She's dead, and he's treating it like a $20 discount. And this imbalance surprises us, but it makes sense because we know George. And those two principles drive Seinfeld. I just ruined it for you. You'll still laugh at Seinfeld, but then you'll become a comedy bore and turn to people next to you and say, you know the principle that underpins that? Well, it's actually called disproportion. So it's got a name, and once you know that principle, you too can come up with your own Seinfeld scenarios. of course, you've got to practice and practice and be good as Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld and all of their writers, but you will get there because at least you've got a flashlight and a map. And that's the Seinfeld theory.
Yes, there is Seinfeld, scientifically broken down and explained for the first time ever.
Well, not the first time ever. One of your great Americans, Steve Kaplan, is a guy who teaches people this stuff. He's got North America, and I've had everywhere else, but he invaded Australia and made the mistake of, you know, telling a room full of people, and I was one of them. And so I'm going to come to America and make the mistake of getting out some of my other wacky theories. Because you want to know how to make people laugh? It's just one simple, you know, the secret of comedy. The secret of comedy, Steve, is to create a surprise that makes sense. To create a surprise that figures, a surprise that people should have seen coming. If you think about any joke you've ever seen or any funny sitcom, when you're laughing, it's because you've seen something that makes sense. And it surprised you because you figured the joke would be going some other direction or the scene would be going somewhere else. That George couldn't seriously stand next to a coffin and ask the father for a death certificate so that he can get a $20 discount. But it makes sense because it's George.
Yeah, absolutely.
George is an exaggeration of his idiosyncrasies and of his insecurities. And so he'll always surprise us because he goes that step further. You know, he plays Trivial Pursuit with a guy in a bubble. The guy has to live in a bubble. And George antagonizes this guy. And why? Because he doesn't like losing Trivial Pursuit. Moves. And, of course, we're surprised, but it makes sense. We're surprised because it wouldn't happen in the real world, but it makes sense because it's George, who uses his body like an amusement park, which none of us would ever do, because we don't find George attractive.
Very true. And, like, so what kind of similar comedies do you have in Australia, like, compared to Seinfeld or anything here in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's funny. There's kind of a difference between the Australian comedy and American comedy. And it goes back to that historic stuff I was talking about. Because America started off so well, modern America anyway, started off so well, all those white people turning up and everybody got a paddock. You know, if you wanted a mountain, you'd go and say, the mountain is mine. And so there remains, of course, you know, the next thing they did was bring a whole bunch of people who didn't want to be there, grabbed them in Africa and stole them and brought them over. But what has happened is that America has held on to this optimism. Americans are all really optimistic. And it's a wonderful part of your culture that people who are African Americans have managed to go as far as to get, you know, a president, to attain the highest office. And it's because there is this optimism that we can break our chains, we can step out of our lives, we can make new rules. All we have to do is back our own judgment, work as hard as we can, and we can achieve our dreams. Australia does not operate on that basis because it started as a prison where everybody, including, you know, all of the white people who came from all sorts of nations, arrived in chains. And there were years, decades, where this just didn't change. So what goes on in the back of Australia's minds informs our comedy. One of the guys I met called Steve Healy, who helped take the office sitcom from England to America said, though he worked out, we needed to work with this optimism. Because if you're in Britain, you're in the world's most cynical nation. And why? Because no matter how good things are inside, you look outside and you're stuck in Britain. The food is crap. The weather's terrible. The people have bad teeth. There's not much to do in England. Whereas in America, no matter how bad things might be inside your house, you look out and there's America, land of opportunity. Grand Canyon, Statue of Liberty. You too can be Donald Trump if you want to. I mean, who would want to, but Donald does. Australia's in the middle. Australia is the world's most skeptical nation. America is the most optimistic, Britain's the most cynical, Australians the most skeptical. Because with a prisoner's mentality, we are very skeptical of people who have power, who have wealth. In the same way, a prisoner doesn't really care whether the warden's got a new girlfriend, whether the warden's got a new car. It doesn't mean anything, it doesn't penetrate. So a lot of Australian comedy is about skepticism. It's about people who are putting up a front. There's a great show called Utopia, which is full of all these warring, highly egomaniacal characters. And of course, they're very funny for Australians because we don't believe a word of it. But it's kind of a different motor to what you have. The motor, even in things like Seinfeld, is an understanding that one day Jerry and Elaine and Kramer and George could work it out. Maybe one day they will. Whereas in Australia, we assume it'll never work out. You guys, you're in a prison. You're in a prison with a really nice view. So that's a very long answer to a very simple question. But if you want to write for Australia, Australian TV, that skepticism is worth playing with. And as I teach my students, you know, if you want to write for America, you want there to be something that can be saved in each of your characters, which is what they did in The Office to make it work. The first series the Americans didn't go so well, and Steve Healy said, we had to stop and think, why isn't this working? It's a funny show. So they made the boss, Michael, daffy. They made him a little bit, a little bit easily panicked, whereas the British guy was just cynical and self-serving. But it was that daffiness that made you think, oh, Michael, maybe one day you'll learn. And that's why I think America actually has a superior cultural bonding. Optimism's and always a better way to start anything than skepticism.
Yeah, although skepticism is healthy, you know, to an extent.
You've got to have one. You know, you've got to have one skeptic on Gilligan's Island, but then you leave that up to the professor.
Exactly.
The best things happen when dreamers like you guys, you know, sit around and say, what's possible? And somebody says, everything. Come on, you idiots. Give me that monkey. We're going to build a show.
All right. And probably the last thing that I wanted to cover with you is that you actually ran for the Australian Senate back in 2013. And you were given like some kind of dubious honor. Like, go into that. Like, explain what the title was that you were given in place of actually making it into the Senate.
Yeah, I didn't actually make it anywhere near the Senate because I had no policies, I put in no money, and I didn't campaign. And I figured that would make people say, you know, at least it's a pure candidate. Tim's not trying to, you know, spin bull twang at us. Like, we just don't see him. But, of course, it didn't work. I'd run before, too, which is just always good fun. And freaks out the local candidate. I ran against the head of the Liberal Party, who aren't liberal. In fact, they're like the GOP without the cows. And I ran against that guy, the head of the party, like the House Majority Leader, and it was good fun. Like, I got 4.5%, which we thought was a Pyrrhic victory. We certainly thought it was a moral victory. I'm not sure what title you're talking about. Maybe it was just one I gave myself. I don't know.
I think so.
Yeah, fairly rabid people that I work with. And if I don't make it up, then, you know, they'll make it up. Maynard, my Skype guy, my podcaster, maybe he would have made something up.
Oh, it's possible, because that's when I was just doing my research on you to come up with questions and talking subjects. I've come across that.
Future King, future Senator, Senator Hopeful.
There you go.
Yeah, got to stay optimistic. I'll get there one day, and I still won't have any policies, which means if I do get in the Senate, I've got a wide open slate.
Yes. Absolutely. That's a good way to look at it. All right, Tim. And now, in closing, tell all the listeners where they can find you on social media. And, of course, you can tag your podcast again.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Steve. You can find me on Twitter at RealTimFerguson, because I'm, as far as I know it, real. So at Real Tim Ferguson, and there's you'll always find all this art. I'm doing another art exhibition soon, and there'll always be clips and jokes. And you can find me on the Facebook machine at Tim Ferguson Cheeky Monkey Comedy Courses. And that's... that'll explain where I am, what I'm doing. And I think that's about it. Oh, and I'm on, what's it called, Instagram. And again, I'm Real Tim Ferguson there. You'll see a lot more of my artwork there. It's furiously expensive. Don't go dreaming. Even I can't afford my art. But at least you can see it there for free.
All right. Hey, I have to check that out. And hey, Tim.
Monkey too. Get the Cheeky Monkey. I don't know where. I think Currency Press are the publishers, and you'll be able to get it on, you know, one of those gadgets. It'll tell you how to write a sitcom or a funny movie, and you might as well know so you can show off at dinner parties.
Yeah, there you go. And hey, it's a lot more affordable than his art, so that's something you can actually buy, listeners.
Yeah, don't buy the art. It's a ripoff.
Well, hey, Tim, it was a blast. It finally happened. We did the podcast. You made it on my show. And I just wanted to again extend a thank you.
Oh, thank you. And thanks to all your listeners. I hope they've held on, just because, you know, it's great listening to you. And I'm so glad that your podcast is so successful and going so well, getting out to a great audience, because you deserve it, man. You do some great stuff.
Hey, thank you, Tim, and likewise, man. And on that note, I would just like to say that it has been another successful delivery.